Hello, Happy New Year, and welcome to your weekly dose of the latest sustainability fun news, facts, and reviews brought to you by the Green Elephant. This week, is it only the rich and corporations that are damaging the planet? Our tech recycling challenge begins. Should we sticker bomb the world? And we interview Leanne Bell, author of How on Earth Can I Be Eco-Friendly? Joining me to discuss these and more as usual is Russell. Good morning, Russell.
Good morning, Mike. I am particularly looking forward to your interview with Leanne, actually. It took a while for the book to arrive during the Christmas stroke, COVID stroke, whatever melee it was.
Okay.
But her book looks a fascinating and different type of read. So, yeah, that'll be good. Okay.
Brilliant. Also coming up are an Action Alley. And we've got a special guest edition of Fact or Fake with Leanne. We'll also be talking about hot rocks, disco balls, coffee pods, coral reefs, bamboo, trash cameras, wooden satellites, cows, veganuary, PPE, mattresses, socks and pants. So, top story this week, and this comes from a report from Oxfam, which is entitled Confronting Carbon Inequality. And let me just read you, and listeners, bear with me for a second, some statistics that come from this report. So the richest 1% of people on the planet produce double the carbon pollution as the bottom 50%. 100 companies are the source of more than 70% of the greenhouse gas emissions since 1988. So that's 100 companies produce responsible for 70% of greenhouse gas emissions. Between 1990 and 2015, so that's over the past 25 years, annual emissions grew by 60% and cumulative emissions doubled. That's some context. But the richest 10% of people were responsible for 52% of emissions.
Yeah.
Whereas the poorest 50%, produce just 7% of those emissions. The poorest 50% use just 4% of the available carbon budgets. The richest 1% were responsible for 15% of emissions and 9% of carbon budgets. The richest 5% were responsible for a third of total growth in emissions. And growth in emissions of the richest 1% was three times that of the poorest 50%. And you might be thinking, well, okay, globally, that makes sense because, you know, poorer countries don't have capacity to spend. They're not, you know, consuming. They're not emitting as much. So it makes sense that richer countries and people are going to produce those emissions. But, you know, if you take it away from the world and you take it just to the UK, who, you know, we're a rich country. And in the same period, the richest 10% in the UK were responsible for 27% of total emissions, which was the same as the poorest 50%.
A little bit better.
And the richest 1% responsible for 7% of the emissions. So, you know, we could go on and on with these statistics, but it is quite clear from the data, from the evidence, that the rich and large corporations are the source of the vast majority of emissions in the world and causing the carbon footprint.
And I don't think I've seen a report that displayed nuances of the same information in so many different ways. But I think there's one, that one stat is that 3.1 billion people, take away the percentages, 3.1 billion people, as it was when it was measured, it's got a bit bigger now, is creating the same emissions as 63 million people.
Yes.
And then in the middle classes, I place myself in. I'm not chronically poor. I'm not amongst the poorest, but I'm definitely not in the top 63 million. That's for sure.
Absolutely.
And this middle class, as it's the new carbon middle class, perhaps it is, is still banging out, what's that, 25% of the, or 41% of the world's emissions. And it's horrific, really, when you think of it, that 1% of people in the earth can do as much damage as 3.1 billion.
Are those 1% going to be listening to the Green Elephant Show? Are those 1% going to be looking at their... Are they going to be looking at... Well, I'd love to think they were, but...
Well, yeah, of course they would, yeah.
Are they going to be considering their personal carbon footprint reduction? Are they going to be thinking about using less plastic, not buying a carrier bag at Sainsbury's or Tesco, going vegan, using less plastic? All those messages that you see being spread and that we talk about here on the show,
yeah,
they're all aimed at poorer individuals.
Yeah.
And as we've just said, the poorer individuals are not the ones that are creating the vast majority of the footprint.
Have the biggest impact. Absolutely.
You know, the poorest are being asked to pay the price for the actions of the wealthy, really, is what's happening. You know, we're paying that carbon price because rich people are, you know, having more than their fair share and huge corporations.
Agreed. And I'm kind of flummoxed as to how they do it, to be honest. It's fairly impressive. Hmm. It must come down to... desk conspicuous consumption, yeah, where they can afford it, they do it. You know, yeah. I can fly my own plane, so I'll fly my own plane.
And there you have it. So we'll link the report up in the show notes for people that want to go and have a look at the report and delve into the detail. But one of the main areas of the emissions was on travel and transport. So private jets, super yachts, all that travel, that is a huge contributor to their, you know, the unequal share of emissions. But, you know, we constantly give out this message on the show that is, you know, we can make a difference. We can all do a little bit, and we should all do our piece. And I don't think we're not suggesting that message changes. But I don't see the change in the rich, in big business, in government. I don't see that, you know, big shift.
They're not going to downsize from a 53-room mansion which has four people living in it because it's in a prestigious place in LA or something. Mm. Or, I mean, it's just, and they're not going to stop flying into work because it's such a bother to go on the roads
on public transport.
And time is money, and it all comes down to money. Everything, of this is money.
It's all money.
And so, you know, all said and done, the government's going to have to hit them where it hurts, which is going to be in their wallet.
But is the government going to do that, given that they have big business lobbying them, funding them, supporting them?
Agreed. But I mean, they can start removing aviation or fuel levy, or the put tax on aviation fuel, maybe, or you know, all the stuff that we can't do because we're middle income individuals now because of COVID. These people are carrying on doing because they've got a private island and a private jet.
Yeah.
And it's kind of not fair.
It completely isn't fair. And I think, you know, the carbon tax is an interesting one about how that will work. And that's going to have to, you know, come to some extent. We're already seeing a shift from petrol to electric cars. You know, where else is that tax revenue that comes from, you know, gas, petrol, those kind of fossil fuels, where is that tax income going to come from in future for governments? And, you know, looking at different other forms of carbon tax is going to be, you know, one of the routes we're going to get down. It's just, we need to happen quicker. We need to move quicker. And it's,
I know. And to be honest, to make them really effective, we can't just say, oh, it's this, you know, it's got to be international. We've all got to agree that the wealthy can no longer be emitting this kind of carbon output, and therefore a logarithmic impact on their carbon budget, maybe, or exponential, because it's just not right.
Yeah, it's a topic and a subject which isn't going to change quickly, and it'd be really interesting to know what listeners think about this topic. We'll put some stuff out across our social, and it'd be great to get some feedback, you know, what listeners' thoughts are. If listeners have suggestions of solutions, that'd be great to, you know, have some positive sort of thoughts about, you know, what can be done to address this situation. But it's certainly a position which we feel needs highlighting more and more often, you know.
If you're part of the 1%, then please do, you know, come in and give us your point of view.
Brilliant. Yeah. We'd love to interview you.
We'd love to do that. That would be brilliant.
And hear the explanation as to why you couldn't make some small changes.
Yeah.
Because those small changes by the wealthy and the large companies will have a disproportionately large impact, and that's a good thing.
Yeah, that's great.
Yeah. So it's now January. We're out the other side of the festive season, and we are...
Are we though? Aren't they extending the festive season now? They're suggesting that the Victorian Twelfth Night is dead, and now we should have the 40 days, which runs until Candlemas or something. So that we can celebrate longer during lockdown.
So the festive seasons should be a quarter of the year.
Yeah, I think that's the kind of a... Anyway, there's another sustainability issue from a different perspective, isn't it?
It is indeed.
But sorry.
That's okay. But we need a new challenge, and our challenge isn't to challenge the length of the festive period. Our challenge for January is all to do with technology recycling. We didn't want to go down the route one of supporting Veganuary. We obviously went vegan in November, and you know, dry January, those kind of more obvious ones. Lots of people over the festive period will have received new technology, new gifts, new presents, new devices of various kinds, or they might just have upgraded in recent months.
Yes.
But what that will mean is that there's an awful lot of old tech out there. And the question that we've been thinking about and that we're going to address over the next month is, well, what do you do with all this old tech?
Yeah.
Now, I went through personally, and I did a really quick, and I didn't even go into the back of that cupboard, you know, that the cupboard everybody has in their house with all the stuff in. Yeah, yeah. And I definitely didn't go into the garage.
I wouldn't go in there. It's cold, if nothing else.
So this was just stuff lying around, which I thought I need to do something about this because I've not used it in... This is stuff I've not used in a couple of years. I'm not going to use it in the future. And I had an Apple 5S phone just lying around. A Bush TV soundbar, not being used. A Sony microphone, not using it. I got a USB plug-in sound card, not using it. Innumerable leads. I can't tell you how many, a nest of leads that I've got lying around not being used. And I mean, Russell, did you have a look at what did you find?
I had a route around. I must admit, I do have a little bit too much. As you know, I work in a cellar, so all I have to do is look to my right.
Okay. And you didn't have to open a door.
I can see piles of stuff. I can see an Xbox that I haven't used or none of the kids have used for ages. I've got... I've got a 17-inch MacBook Pro, one of the very first aluminium ones that came out, broken screen, but I know it still works, but I haven't got a charger for it. And I noticed some of the boys, I've got a GoPro, one of the first GoPros, and an old Dell computer, plastic one, just sitting around.
Brilliant. I don't know
if it works or it doesn't.
We'll have a bit of a dig deeper personally over the month of January, but I'm sure listeners have got loads of stuff out there. So it'd be really interesting to know what our listeners have found and what you've got lurking around. And so over the next month, we've got some really great guests coming on talking about circular computing, reuse of devices, you know, reusing them and repurposing them in poorer countries and economies. So we'll be addressing questions like, you know, how do you reuse items? Where do you recycle them? I mean, I wouldn't really know where to recycle an old iPhone. But what happens if you throw it away? What really happens to that tech if you just throw it away?
Yeah.
And I guess there's, you know, do you really need to upgrade? Was the upgrade really necessary, or did you just kind of want it?
Absolutely. There's some interesting issues there. For example, your 5S phone can't run the latest operating system, and therefore, in security terms, as a business, it's a dodgy thing to use. But for somebody who just browses the internet occasionally and doesn't scoot across dangerous places, might be fine.
Yeah.
But there's a very old, and I didn't realize how old it was until I saw it again yesterday, Greenpeace video about the the rubbish dumps in Ghana, where young children are employed to burn the plastic casings off wire and stuff to recover the copper and other precious metals. And what they said is, even with the Basel Convention, which says that you shouldn't ship electronic waste to a developing country.
Yep.
Back then, and this is 2008 when the video was done, companies were still shipping tech out which was broken.
Yeah.
And so there's a big difference between reuse, recycling, the reuse and selling on. It needs to be working kit. And if you're sending something to a third party, it's a developing country, then it can't be broken. That's waste. It's now become waste. If you can't get it repaired. And there's, I think, the other thing is, how can you repair? And that comes into our circular economy discussion later
and
as well.
And recycling and all sorts of issues. So, so looking forward to it this month. Yeah. We'll be getting stuck into that. At the end of the month, I've listed a few items there, but we'll be showing you what you'll be able to find out what happened to that Apple iPhone 5S. So you can follow its story and what happened to the leads I've got and things like that. So we'll share that with you, and you can see the journey of our tech and what happened to it. But yeah, we'd love to know what's happening to the listeners. So moving on, and I kind of really like this story, but it's maybe a topic for a wider discussion, which is the city of Massachusetts, made famous by the Bee Gees. they have become the first US city to mandate the placing of stickers on fuel pumps to warn drivers of the resulting dangers posed by the climate crisis. So you drive your car into a gas station, petrol station in Massachusetts, and when you go to take the pump out and fill your car up, there is a huge bright yellow sticker saying, "Warning, this stuff is not good for the environment." And I thought, you know, that was just great. And it has text on it that says, if you burn gasoline, diesel, ethanol, and the actual text says it has major consequences on human health and the environment, including contributing to climate change.
Mm.
And so I thought, well, that's, in itself an interesting thing.
Yeah.
Maybe challenging if the availability of alternative vehicles and fuels isn't there. But I think there was a wider point, really, which was, why do we not sticker everything? Why do we not sticker the world with bright yellow stickers on things that are going to cause, you know, damage to the climate?
I had to go to the doctors today. There's a.
Okay.
This is probably.
Are you being vaccinated already?
I'm not old enough, but I might be sick enough.
Okay.
But the reason I say that is I unusually went and sat in the waiting room, which of course was very lonely because they don't let many people in nowadays. And I sat faced with what was a wall of notices. Flu jab, and don't, you know, wash your hands when you get home, and, you know, all the stuff that you commonly see, but then loads of other stuff like privacy notices and and I think and having worked with a university who had to try and recently, you know, make its campus safe for its students, they became very aware that they were over stickering, over informing, because basically it becomes an anathema. Do you know people that buy cigarettes read the sticker every time? The sticker that covers half the cigarette pack, which says you're going to die.
That was
going to
be my next example was, you know, if they do it on cigarettes
and
smoking is going down.
It is, yeah.
Whether regular smokers read those or not is something for a regular smoker to answer, I guess.
Yeah, I guess so.
Instead of on your, when you buy your single use carrier bag from the supermarket, it has the supermarket branding on it. It's not offensive. But if it had a bright yellow
sticker
warning on it saying this bag is going to kill a sea turtle, then perhaps...
Picture of a sad sea turtle on it.
Yeah, Or we could even, I'd even offer to let them use our elephant mascot with the crying bit. You know, I'd be that generous. They could use that on their carrier bags. I know. It's very
protect that brand.
Community spirited, yeah.
But I get that. I do get that. The people, especially when you buy it rarely, you'd look at the side of that and go, "I know, I'll buy something else, or carry it out, or something else."
That purely that couple of seconds to stop and think.
Yeah.
And some people are just going to ignore it, and just buy anyway, and do whatever.
Yeah, absolutely. But
you know, if there's a big yellow sticker on a bottle of shampoo that says, you know, dangerous, uses palm oil and contributes to deforestation and global warming, and there's a bottle of shampoo on the shelf next to it, which costs you, you know, $20 more, which doesn't have that on it,
you're gonna
pick up the one without the thing on it, aren't you?
Yeah, as long as and I think that falls very much into, again, the circular economy discussion about designing products right.
Yes.
From the offset. And if there's enough pressure brought to bear, which says, if I design it badly, I'm going to get called out. And when I get called out, it's going to hurt my sales. So why don't I change my design? Yeah. So I think, perhaps it's a good short-term technique for getting things done. But, you know, how often do you pick up a bag of food that's bad for you? A bag of sweeties, which says sugar content, and the red flashing sign on the sugar level, but you still buy it because you fancy some sweeties. Yeah. So
let us know what you think. We'll put a picture of the big yellow sticker in the show page, and we'll put it on social. Be really keen to know what listeners think. So let's take a trot through some other big sustainability news stories from the week, and a local story, a Cornish Hot Rocks claims some breakthroughs in geothermal power. There's a deal between Geothermal Engineering Limited and Ecotricity. And the good news about this is they're drilling a very deep hole into the ground. and it's going to power 10,000 homes. So drilling almost 3 miles into the granite below Cornwall. And they're going to supply 3 megawatts to the local grid in the next year. So that's good news. The best thing about this story, though, was that as well as the geothermal power on the site, they're also going to power a rum distillery using the geothermal power. So I thought that was a positive benefit of this
I think initiative. it's an aging store to start off with, but then they are going to start bringing in their own rum, and I think this is a great development. Yeah. Not the Hot Rocks, the rum distillery. Not that I drink much. Oh, keeping on the drinks theme there, and you're a man that likes his coffee, aren't you?
Yeah.
We've always had this battle in the office of having a good bean to cup grinding machine, because we didn't want to buy into this podding system, which used aluminium, horrendous plastics, and create dreadful waste. There's a company called Bruvi Bee Pods that are seeking to resolve this. They have come up with their pods, which are not only 100% recyclable, and I'd like to see the stats on that. I must admit, we've had that conversation before, haven't we?
We have.
100% recyclable means what exactly? Does it mean they actually get recycled? But they're also designed to break down without leaving microplastics behind in a landfill environment. So that's brilliant. And then they've managed to get a number of a range of different things to hit the taste buds of the strongest coffee aficionado. So that's a good news. I think this, what I do when I'm starting to read these ones now, and I don't think this is, you know, spending a lot of time reading these types of technology breakthroughs. This is a breakthrough, whether this is a breakthrough or is it just an innovation, this is a very, very first world.
It is
that 41% of carbon emissions type bunch of people, the middle 40%. Are you going, do you really need coffee that bad?
Well, I think those more affluent percentages of the global population might be interested in the next story, which is bamboo socks, it's recycled and repurposed bamboo. But the concept here is that more of us are more sedentary, we're sitting down for longer, we're not moving as much, and therefore compression socks are becoming more and more common, because you know you want to keep the blood elsewhere in the body, not in the lower legs.
Yes.
So the company Ostrich Pillow, which I quite like the company name.
I know.
Ostrich Pillow, making bandy socks.
Doesn't exactly say what it does, yeah.
No.
Yeah, okay.
So they're made out of recycled bamboo, 50% bamboo, recycled polyester, recycled nylon. And it meets a standard which I hadn't heard of, the Ecotex Standard 100 certification. There's a conversation on certifications to be had another time, but
I think so.
But yeah, interesting.
Yeah, I thought that was quite interesting. Obviously, you don't have to buy bamboo socks if you get up and move around. There's another thing to do.
Yeah.
Moving on to our famous junk food. Should we call it junk food? Fast food, maybe McDonald's company, who have started to install cameras in their dumpsters. Mm. It sounds quite interesting, I must admit. What they're seeking to do with these cameras and the all famous artificial intelligence to take from those photos and from other sensors as well, to make sure that what is going into the right dumpster is the right stuff. Mm. And it's an interesting thing, because if recycling gets contaminated with the wrong type of waste,
yep.
the whole what Can't goes into the waste, it doesn't get recycled.
Yeah.
And so if we want to raise our recycling, we need to make sure that we're cleaning our making sure we're not contaminating with undue waste. And so this AI system, this camera system, the sensor system, not only tells them when somebody's perhaps put the wrong type of trash in a bin, mm-hmm. It also looks to monitor the usage of the bins, and therefore they only get emptied when they need to be emptied and not when they're half full and it's the schedule for them to be emptied.
Yeah,
reducing hauliers' costs and emissions as well. So, it's not
a good use of technology.
It is a good use of technology, I think.
Talking about good use of technology, before mm-hmm. Christmas in the UK, we had our best day for wind generated electric, over 40%, or 17.3 gigawatts, if you prefer, generated by wind turbines. So, it was almost a whole day that this carried on. So it's a good achievement, I think. Let's hope we beat it again soon.
Yes, that would be good. But you're only going to beat it by adding more wind turbines. I think that was a particularly stormy day. And if we've got much bluster, you can turn the windmills off anyway.
Yeah.
Looking up into the skies, which we do like to do. And the other day I did see an odd set of lights moving across the sky, and it took a while before I found out that it's SpaceX have launched a whole stack of satellites, and as they go up into the upper atmosphere, they stay in a long line as they launch them. They're launching hundreds of these things to provide better internet, and that links
900 so far.
900
and
so
thousands
far,
thousands more planned.
That's right, and they are all metal.
Yes,
or metal and other products, and Japanese company, apparently a forestry company, has concluded that they could perhaps have a wood inspired satellite by 2023, and that they can send up this satellite, and after it's gone past its serviceable age and done its job.
Yeah,
which many of them have. I think there was some comment, there's about 6,000 satellites circling the Earth, of which 60% are defunct and are therefore junk. So not only are we filling landfill, we're also filling the space around our Earth as well. It's an interesting one. How wood breaks down in a vacuum with no bacteria and no animals to rot it, I don't know, but they seem to feel that it would. And if it fell to Earth, it would burn up instead of potentially contaminating the atmosphere. So interesting concept.
Yeah. So as well as masks and PPE and all those sort of covering starting to pollute the environment, we see them laying around all over the place. And there were some stats on how many that were being washed up, and it was quite frightening. When those items are produced, mainly in factories in the Far East, there are huge amounts of plastic offcuts as these things are being made. And a company called Newsprung has a great idea. It's taking those offcuts, it's twisting them into great long lengths of plasticky stuff, winding that up and creating mattresses.
Yeah.
So it's a fantastic idea. It's just a village of women are turning unused or offcuts of PPE into mattresses for homeless people. So
it's brilliant. Absolutely.
Congratulations to them and well done. What a great initiative that is.
Okay. Well, looking a little bit more into wildlife, a nice headline here, a moving target. You got to get that one.
You have.
It's about sheep, of course. No, it's about cows. And the cows, they're GPS enabling cows so they can find the best grass.
Yes.
Oh, no, I've read that wrong. What they're doing...
But they are GPS enabling them.
They are GPS enabling them. And it's a great idea. Obviously, when you've got a large area which you're grazing cows on, you want to give them the freedom to graze wherever they want. Now you can find the best grass better than you can. But they have to fence everything off. They have to stop them, you know, being in danger to the road or to people that perhaps walking around. And so they've created these GPS tags that hang around, look like a mobile phone around the neck of the cow. And as they get to where the farmer has deemed to be their border, mapped out on a mobile phone map, they get a call and the cows answer it. And the
you're going too far. Can you come back? Don't you argue with me, Sonny.
You turn back. I don't know which way I was going in the first place. But no, what it does, it does a little ringtone, presumably the Nokia ringtone, just to irritate everybody. I'll finish it off. If they go too far, they do get a small electric shock, but once they've learned that the ringtone is a precursor to that, they turn back as soon as the ringtone comes on.
Yeah, I would love to know what tune this plays. And I in my ideal world, it plays some kind of cow-based pop song.
Like Move Over or...
Or Moving On Up or... Phyllis Nelson hit Move Closer.
Move Closer.
Anyway... More suggestions, listeners, we'd be happy to hear those.
better stop there.
Indeed. A new report from the UN Environment Agency says that the world could lose its coral reefs by the end of the century. We know how important they are. We know that they're dying. And it's just another stark warning that... you know, we need to do something, or the coral reefs, as well as millions of other species, could be gone. So,
But good news, there is some good news, but it's kind of a bit horrific if you think about it. The last known male giant Swinhoe soft shelled turtle is no longer alone.
That's easy for you to say.
Well, at least I got it out in one attempt.
It's no longer alone. That's good.
And so they have actually found a female of his species in Vietnam. And I mean, these are big turtles, 13 stone, 86 kilograms. And it's great news because obviously now they can, of course, first thing they did when they found it is they captured it and they started testing it. But it always seems a little bit, managed to survive all this time without our intervention, but obviously she needs to get in contact with the male to carry on the species. But that's great news because the other one's in China, so they wouldn't have found each other by accident.
No. Most endangered turtle in the world, it says here. So great. A passing note: we couldn't finish the news this week without mentioning the fact that it's Veganuary, and hundreds of thousands of people took part last year and this year is sent to be even bigger. So we'll keep a watching brief on Veganuary, and obviously we'll bring you any stories that are interesting. If listeners want to know about veganism, then have a listen to the podcast in November when we went vegan and hear all about that.
Yeah. And I think that's quite interesting. 400,000 participants, interesting, but there are 600,000 in the UK alone. Did you know that?
Yeah, yeah.
But anyway, finally, for the short news, and keeping on species, the scientists discover 503 new species in 2020. Now, I suppose that the concept being that if you don't know what you're wiping out, you'll never miss them, which seems to be man's concept at the moment.
Yeah, yeah.
They have found, you find a species and immediately mark it as in danger because there's so few of them. And so they have found the Popolanga monkey, who's critically endangered. So among that 503, they suddenly find one that's immediately endangered. It seems a bit bizarre that we just have to find them so that we can make them endangered.
Yeah.
Or log them as endangered. Otherwise, we'd never know they'd exist.
No.
Existed in the first place, which is a bit of a thought. Oh, yeah. But good news, I suppose. We are still discovering stuff even during these critical years.
And that's the end of the news for the week. An action now. We like to suggest things that listeners can try. And this one's a great one because you can do it from home during lockdown. And there's an organisation called Global Forest Watch. And this is something set up by the World Resources Institute. And it's a tracking system. And there's a computer algorithm that scans images. And it looks at images of forests, and it scans these images from different time periods. And if it sees a place where it thinks that trees have changed, there were some trees, now they're not any trees, it flags that image. But in order to verify that, or to perhaps identify the reason for that change or that deforestation, it needs human eyes to have a look at those images and say, well, have those trees actually gone? What might have caused that? Was it a forest fire? Was it illegal logging? Was it something else that happened? And so what they need is volunteers to look at these images, look for signs of, you know, human impact, roads, farms, trees that look in a suspiciously straight line. looks like they've been cut down by something mechanical. And that assessment by humans feeds the artificial intelligence so that when it looks at more images and compares those to what it saw in the past, it can form better opinions about what has been deforested and changed. So the idea is that by helping this system, we make it better and better and quicker at identifying these changes on its own, and so that we can, you know, get a much better picture of deforestation that's going on around the world. So if you're looking for something to do over lockdown and you like forests and trees, you can help monitor deforestation around the world. And we'll put a link to this in the show page so you can go up and join Global Forest Watch and help out with that.
There's an app, it's called Forest Watches, so you can search for that as well.
Yeah.
And we'll put a link to that. Yep. That's fascinating, because I must admit I've done a little, I was looking at forest fires for the 2020 review show. I looked at forest fires.
Yep.
And you looked at, obviously, we'd had some serious ones. The scrub, the ones in Australia were quite massive at the beginning of 2020. And then we had the California wildfires, which were horrific. But you take a look now, there's other places where you can look at what's burning at the moment. And again, a piece of AI and satellites technology shows where they find hotspots, and the whole of sub-Saharan Africa is on fire. It's like, seems to be permanently on fire in one way or another. These are big fires. They have to show up on satellite.
Yeah.
You know, this isn't a campfire, but it's got a little bit out of control. So I think green cover, and it's quite interesting. You know, we think of forests and think about Amazonian forests and, you know, that kind of stuff. But there are forests in England, there are forests in America, and they have been depleted as well.
Yeah.
In fact, there's more depletion of green coverage in the developed world than there is in the Amazon. So that's the it's something that we all need to get involved with.
So go and support that. So I'm delighted to welcome Leanne Bell to the show today. Leanne is an author, entrepreneur with a passion for solving the environmental crisis facing the fashion industry. Morning, Leanne.
Good morning. Hello. Morning.
Hello. You're very welcome. It's great to have you. But before we kind of jump into your story and get on to the book, there's one little phrase that I picked up on, which I kind of really liked, and I kind of fits with some of the things we talk about. And you mentioned about being guilt-free or zero guilt. And I wondered what that kind of meant to you.
Yeah, I think that was just, I mean, that's kind of like my mantra for my life as well. So I feel like that kind of ethos has trickled into my book quite a bit. And, you know, when I was writing my book, it was really important to me that the tone of the book wasn't, you know, it wasn't condescending and it wasn't overwhelming for people. And I just really kind of wanted to get that message across that, you know, as long as you try your best, it's okay. I know there's a lot of young people suffering with eco anxiety and that just makes me really sad. I think we've, you know, everybody's got enough to worry about in their lives anyway. You know, the world is such a mad place, and I just think, you know, let's not add one more thing to the mix. Let's try. And you know, I just think as well, like when you're anxious about something, nothing productive or good ever comes out of it either. Yeah. Like, I feel like it's a much better, I don't know, like solution to kind of be a bit more, I say be positive about it. But then I feel like that, you know, it's not that I don't think the situation is serious. Mm. I just feel like being anxious about things doesn't help anything. And like I said, that's my mantra for life. I'm like that about everything.
Yeah, so it's across the board. It's not just eco issues. It's a kind of
everything.
A thing for your life. I mean, that's really interesting. We've just come off of we did a vegan challenge for the month of November. And and it was really interesting. But you do feel guilty because, oops, I had pasta with egg in it instead.
Yeah.
And you do feel guilty. So, yeah, that's a... really love the concept and really great. So why don't we go into your background a bit? So how did you sort of come to be so passionate about kind of ethics and environmentalism and things like that? What's brought you to this place?
I think so I mean, I've always been interested in, you know, nature, and grew up in a semi-rural place and had horses and was outside quite a lot. And okay. And always just, you know, even from being really like a really little kid, just didn't like the thought of us burying waste in the ground. Yeah. Just found it such a bizarre concept. And I remember being about 6 or 7 and learning at school about recycling and going home and saying to my mum, but we don't recycle. You know, this was like, you know, Lancashire in the 90s, early 90s. Yeah. Saying to my mum, like, we don't recycle. And my mum was like, yeah, I know, but I don't know why. And I was like, but we should have a separate bin for the recycling, you know. And then kind of finding out, oh my God, so we're just burying all these glass bottles in the ground. And I just always remember that just didn't sit right with me. Like, I just didn't like the feeling of that.
Well, that's really interesting. How old were you, do you think, when you were kind of having those kind of thought?
Young, like 6 or 7. Yeah,
that's quite unusual, because I think nowadays lots of people kind of come to it, but
not
young. Or
I just remember being so baffled by it. I remember my teacher, you know, saying like, oh, when we dig these huge holes and put all the rubbish in the ground. And I just remember sitting there thinking, what,
that's are we mad?
That's awful. But...
yeah, you couldn't make it up if you know, if the aliens landed on planet Earth and said, what do you do with your rubbish? We dig a hole and...
It
sounds crazy, doesn't it?
Yeah, I keep saying about landfill, and I just say, do you know what? Like, when they teach, like, our generation in history in hundreds of years' time, hopefully, they'll look back and be like, oh, my God, they were such idiots, as if they used to do this.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But, oh, absolutely crazy. So you started early with your kind of interest.
But I didn't really do anything about it, you know, like I was in like, you know, the environment club at school, but I wasn't kind of like a hardcore, like eco warrior really. Although my friends will, if you ask my friends, they will always say that they expected me to work for Greenpeace or something, okay. but I didn't. And then when I was in my final year of university, I studied fashion marketing and I was like 22, 23. And so I started looking at fast fashion and the disposable nature of clothing. And that was like 10 years ago. And that was when I started getting really interested in that.
So you're probably early to that kind of circular fast fashion kind of thing, because I think it's probably only been the last 3 to 5 years where it's really, you know, been.
Definitely when I was at uni and I did my dissertation. So my dissertation was on the environmental impact of Primark. And that was 10 years ago. There wasn't anybody else in my university that was writing about that. I suppose like it definitely over the last 10 years has gained a lot more traction. And that obviously makes me really happy now. I feel like everybody's talking about it now. And then when everybody's talking about stuff, that's when change happens. Whereas before, there wasn't so much.
And maybe we'll come on to the difference between talking and doing in a second, but so you wrote a dissertation on Primark. I mean, that's really interesting. Was what you found as bad as some of the stories and things that we see and hear?
I mean, it was it was more kind of veered towards, so it was the environmental impact and then also like consumers' attitude towards it. So there's a really famous picture actually from a newspaper in London, and it was when Primark had just opened at Marble Arch, that really big one. And so, you know, a woman is walking, and obviously this is in the newspaper, so I don't know how true it is, but the picture made out, that her bag, because you know they have those paper bags, that the bag had broken and the clothes had dropped on the floor and that she didn't stop to pick them up.
Okay.
That's what the picture made out. And
so
it was kind of like, my dissertation wasn't on that picture, but kind of like, it was just kind of like investigating how we value things when they don't cost us very much. And I think it kind of stemmed from the fact that, I mean, I talk about this in my book. I had a real moment where I was moving house and I had this pile of Primark clothing and I didn't remember buying any of it. And I had like a moment and I just felt like, oh my God, I've been like such a zombie. I've gone into this shop and I've just bought things on autopilot. And I just was so annoyed at myself, and that was what, and I stopped shopping at Primark after that.
You finished studying, working in London, and then you went to Taiwan.
I started my own ethical women's wear brand.
Okay.
And that was online, and then moved to Taiwan, and then wrote my book while I was in Taiwan. Yeah.
And was that because you'd seen anything different in Taiwan? Was there anything?
No, I purely went to Taiwan because I went to go and teach over there. Okay. And so I was going to teach, and my choices were Japan, South Korea, and Taiwan. And it was like November when I was going to move. Sure. And so I just Googled what's the temperature in Tokyo.
It's good a reason I need to change it.
And like Tokyo and Seoul are like, it was like 1 degree and Taipei was 22. And I was like, well,
We have a winner.
Yeah. Okay. And that was it, really.
So when you were there in Asia, you didn't really get any exposure to sort of the fashion setup and industry there?
I did some work on the Fashion Revolution event in Taiwan. But mainly I was just kind of working on my own a lot. And attempting to learn Chinese and just writing my book and teaching and just trying to have a social life as well.
Okay, in Taiwan. So let's move on to the book. And, you know, tell us a bit about what there's a bit of your story in there. But then it's, you know, about being eco-friendly. It's called How on Earth Can I Be Eco-Friendly? And we'll link that up in the show notes later so everybody can go and hopefully buy themselves a copy. But just give us a brief overview of what the book's about. Yeah.
So the book really came about when I had my own ethical women's wear brand, and I felt like there was a lot of people within the industry, within the sustainability industry, connecting with each other. But I felt like a lot of the material out there was not really suitable for people that didn't have any knowledge. And also I felt like it was quite heavy. There wasn't really anything out there that was a starting point that was anybody could pick up and read and have a little look at without committing too much to it. So that was kind of where I decided to start writing it, and it just kind of, it escalated. It was only supposed to be like a 6-month thing, and it turned into I've been working on it for years now.
Okay. I mean, it's a brilliant concept, because we've found, certainly while doing this show, that we talk about, you know, we might be considered by some quite basic terms, but for our listeners, they struggle with terms like carbon offsetting or net zero or carbon neutral and all these things. And
within
sustainability, you kind of know what you're talking about, but the general public absolutely don't. So do you cover those sorts of things, or is it?
I didn't really cover anything to do with much to do with energy. Talks a little bit about carbon emissions, but mainly it was just kind of focusing on kind of like the three key areas for people, you know, which are like food. I tried to look at food and fashion, and then the beauty industry. Just like kind of like the basics of where you'd start, like you as a person.
And so it's just some sort of simple tips, day-to-day living. How can I just be better in my life? And I'm guessing from what we said at the start that it's all kind of guilt-free. It's try your best. Here's some stuff to do. Don't worry if you don't do it all. Yeah. No, that's brilliant. And I like there's a phrase you use which I'd like to just delve into a bit, which is buy less shit, eat more plants, and celebrate your wares, which I particularly enjoyed. So, is buy less shit obvious?
I went at the end of the book, when I was writing the end of the book, you know, because I'm like a really big fan of breaking everything down into layman terms, and I just think like a lot of the times, like, people make their lives like complicated, and people overcomplicate things, and it's just unnecessary. And so, you know, like I said, the book was all about being a starting point for people, and at the end I was just like, how can I sum it up? If people read this and they still think like I don't know what to do, like, how can I just sum it up into three things? And I just thought, well, if you know, if everybody, if all of the middle class people on the planet, you know, bought less things, like, you know, reduce their consumption, you know, incorporated a plant-based diet a few days a week, and wore their clothes a few more times, it's a really good place to start. I like that too. I was like quite proud of myself.
I think you know, some people might not be completely on board with the language, but buy less shit is memorable, and people will remember that. And I mean, we talk about when you're buying something, just think, do you need it, or just do you just want it?
Yeah,
because 90% of the time you just want it. Eat more plants. We've experienced that ourselves, and it's an interesting experience. And I think, you know, we went through a vegan month. And are you vegan yourself, or are you just?
No, I am probably about 97%. So I've gotten
that's
a lot
very specific.
Better.
Okay. About 97%.
I don't know. I would say, I used to live on eggs, and since I came home, I've cut out eggs. I've cut out fish. I just occasionally eat dairy. But I mean, I'm definitely so much better since I came home. It was really hard in Taiwan.
Yeah.
But since I got back, last night I had a vegan dinner. and dessert, and got my dad. This is the most exciting thing, is that my dad had a vegan dinner last night.
Wow. And
that was unheard of before. Yeah. I talk about my dad in my book. So yeah, my dad's eating vegan dinners, and I'm going to broach the subject of doing Veganuary with him, actually, and see how it feels.
Well, good luck. Be lovely to hear how you get on with him. I mean,
my experience
was that the dairy was tricky. Cutting out the meat was easy.
Yeah.
Cutting out the eggs and the milk and things was more challenging because you don't realize how many things that kind of goes into. But certainly on board with eat more plants. If everybody in the world had meat once a week instead of four times a week, it'd make a massive difference. Celebrate your wares. I kind of saw this as a big party time where you put your best clothes on and you have a dance around the room. Is that what you kind of meant, or
maybe? I mean, yeah, I'm always keen for a party. Celebrate your wares is just about how many times we wear our clothes. So at the moment, the average garment is only worn four times before it's discarded.
Wow.
So my friends always laugh at me because I will go out and I'll wear a dress and I'll be like, oh, I've had this for 10 years and I've worn it like, you know, millions of times. It's like I just have like the black dress that I wear to weddings at night and stuff. So I just think like if people, you know, wore their clothes, Livia Firth, she does a thing called the 30 wears challenge, try and make people wear stuff for like 30 times. And there's a well-known hashtag on Instagram, outfit repeater, as well, encouraging people to, you know, repeat their outfits, because there is this connotation of if you wear it on Instagram, you can't wear it again. And you know, that's something that we need to get rid of. So it was just from that reading.
Oh, that's really interesting. We'll link those couple of things up. And we talked a couple of weeks ago about cost per wear, because you might go into, we mentioned Primark, spend £5 on a t-shirt and wear it once. Whereas you might go, you know, to a more expensive brand, but you might keep it for a lifetime and wear it
tens or hundreds
of times. So your cost per wear ends up being much cheaper with this higher quality, more expensive, perhaps more ethical, more garment. So what do you think is next in fashion and fast fashion? Where do you think we're going in that space?
I am a huge advocate for the circular economy. I think it's the only way that we're going to fix the planet, and it definitely is happening. There was just a new report came out the other day. It's the first report that's been done. So identified the industry, circular fashion industry, is a $3 trillion opportunity, apparently. So really, I think, you know, any new brands that are coming out now, they need to be incorporating those circular practices. And you know, to be circular means that you are designing out waste and incorporating materials that are more harmonious with nature. So I don't know if you've heard of Thousand Fell.
I haven't, no.
They're the world's first circular sneaker company.
Okay.
So I really love what they're doing. They have this kind of like, it's like a buyback scheme. So you buy your sneakers from them, and when you're finished with them, you can send them back to them.
That's brilliant. Yeah.
So it's that kind of like shift of responsibility, I guess, that just because you buy your clothes from a company, that company doesn't relinquish responsibility for it to you as a consumer.
Yeah.
And that's really, really important, I think, like sharing that responsibility.
Yeah, that's across all industries. How many industries that produce all sorts of plastic tat just wash their hands of it? They just, I don't know if you saw recently, China brought in a new law that says all their companies have to report their single-use plastic. So the company has to report to the government.
Oh, really?
Their use of single-use plastic. And they brought the law in within about 2 weeks. So just because they can.
Yeah.
But applying that to fashion makes absolute sense, that the organisation maintains responsibility for that. They're more likely to make it last longer, aren't they, surely?
Yeah, I think like there's a lot of really exciting things happening at the moment, you know, like T-Mill in the Isle of Wight, you know, they're making their T-shirts, and they're not they're not a brand. They're, you know, they're working as a supplier. So anybody can set up their own t-shirt brand with them, but they take the t-shirts back and sweatshirts too. And it's just the most amazing concept. Like, I just can't wait for that to be happening, you know, right across the board.
Yeah, that'd be brilliant. And what about fashion supply chains? Because they are particularly problematic. It's all very well for, you know, a high street retailer to say, we're sustainable, we put things in paper bags, we use recycled materials, but the whole supply chain thing seems to be problematic.
Yeah, the problem is that, you know, everybody talks about sustainability and traceability within the supply chain, and it's just, it's a mess, you know. Yes. It's such a mess that you, especially to trace right the way back to the raw material, at the moment it's impossible. So, you know, when there is conflict, like there was a lot in the media at the moment with brands manufacturing with cotton that was produced by the Uyghur people in China, and obviously it's forced labor.
Yeah.
The problem is that the brands, they can't see that far back within their supply chain. So I think blockchain is actually going to be the thing that's going to fix that. Once blockchain is you know, up and running, and it's being introduced at the moment, there's a few kind of pilot projects, but once blockchain is, you know, within, once you've applied blockchain to the cotton industry, you've got you'll have full traceability.
Full traceability, of course. Everything. Yeah. Yeah. That's really interesting, isn't it? Wow. Yeah. That sounds really, really positive, because there's no hiding that accountability at that point, is it? And so those end high street retailers and the consumer will have no, you know, they will know exactly where, who and how those garments are made. That's amazing.
I think in the next 10 years, it'll, you know, it'll get to the point where you'll buy a t-shirt, there'll be a QR code in it.
Yeah.
You'll scan the QR code and you'll be able to see who picked the cotton and where the cotton came from in the t-shirt, and who, you'll be able to see a whole list of whoever has handled your t-shirt, how much they were paid and I think that would
be absolutely amazing, wouldn't it? That would be brilliant. That has to happen, and not just in fashion, but across all industries. Why shouldn't that be the norm? That would be
definitely.
That'd be brilliant. So what's next for Leanne? Then you've written the book, and I hope that goes really well. What's next on the horizon for yourself?
I've written a proposal for a new book, actually. Okay. So I'm just kind of thinking about it. Do I really want to do this? I need to focus on selling the book that I've already written first. But sure. I have written a proposal for a new one, which I think I'm gonna maybe reach out to some publishers in the next 6 months with that. And at the moment I'm teaching at Teesside University at their business school. I love teaching. I love it. So part of me is thinking maybe I'll do a PhD. And then I'm also thinking I can't do both of these. I'm still deciding. I've been researching a textiles recycling plant, about setting one up here in Middlesbrough. It's very, very early stages. I haven't even finished the proposal for it. So it's either that. It's either do a PhD or set up a textiles recycling plant.
Lots of plans in the works. that sounds amazing. If there was a book or a resource that you think that our listeners should have a read of, or you think they should go and look at, what is there anything you would suggest? Apart from your own book, of course, which we'll recommend to them. But
the book that I always recommend, actually, is it focuses on the fashion industry, and it's about 10 years old, but it's one of my favourite books. It's by Lucy Siegel, and it's called To Die For.
Okay.
And I like it because it's the chapters are very separate, so you don't have to read it right the way through. You can kind of, but it covers everything within the fashion industry. It gets like really like into the nitty gritty, and there's some really interesting stuff in there. And Lucy Siegel is just an all round amazing person anyway. So yeah. I really love her writing. So yeah, I always recommend that book.
Brilliant. Okay, well, we'll pass that recommendation on. And now it's time for a bit more fun and a segment which we call Fact or Fake. And I'm going to give you some statements, Leanne, and this isn't a question of being right or wrong. It's partly about highlighting some interesting facts to the listeners, but also having a bit of fun at the same time. So are you ready?
Yeah, I'm ready.
So the first statement is, 80 billion pieces of clothing are consumed around the world every year. Is that a fact or is it fake?
Fact.
It is a fact. It's a mind-boggling number, isn't it? 80 billion pieces.
It is, yeah. And 97% of them are not recycled.
Yeah.
It's crazy.
Okay, so moving on. So only 10% of the clothes people donate to charity shop get sold. The rest goes to landfill.
Fact.
You need to let me finish the statement first. No, that absolutely, it is a fact. You obviously know your fashion face. So yeah, only so people think they're doing the right thing, taking their clothes to a charity shop.
Yeah.
But actually.
And so a lot of the time the stuff is shipped overseas. Ghana has one of the world's largest secondhand clothing markets, and they obviously don't have the same waste regulations that we do. And so all of our old clothes that we've only worn once are ending up in the ground, in Ghana. Yeah. It's awful.
It's bonkers, yeah.
Yeah.
So next, 7 out of 10 textile workers in Bangladesh cannot afford enough food for themselves and their family. That one was a trick one, actually. That's a fake. Oh. The scary number is it's 9 out of 10 workers.
Oh, God. I didn't realise it is 9 out of 10. That's awful.
It's horrific, isn't it? Nine out of 10 textile workers can't feed themselves. So related to that, here's another statement. So paying a living wage to garment workers would add just 5% to the retail price of a piece of clothing. Is that a fact?
Oh, 5%. I feel like it's not even that much. I feel like it's pennies. I think it's lower than 5%.
You'd be absolutely right. It isn't even 5%. It's just 1%.
Yes.
So those people in Bangladesh that can't eat, if we paid 1% more for our clothing... Yeah. They would be able to afford to eat.
Yeah, it's horrific, isn't it?
It's crazy. What a crazy world we live in. And finally, and I'm not sure if you've, I think you've won. You've got more right than wrong. So I lose it. I lose again. I tend to lose this most of the time, but there we are. Finally, 85% of the plastic pollution in the ocean is due to microfibers from synthetic clothing.
Oh God, I really hope this one isn't in my book. There's something. I'm going to go fact.
It is a fact. Oh, so that's 85% of the plastic. Because we always think about plastic bottles and plastic plates and cutlery and things like that.
Microfibers. I mean, that's the problem with polyester, because it is a synthetic fabric. It doesn't disappear, it doesn't biodegrade. It just shreds and gets smaller and smaller and smaller. And just because we can't see it doesn't mean it isn't there, which is terrifying, really, isn't it?
Yeah, it is. It is, absolutely. So well done, Leanne. You win fact or fake.
Thank you.
So finally, where can our listeners find you? Where's the best place to get in touch?
Is Instagram. So I'm at... Oh, I keep forgetting my Instagram handle. I did this the other day as well.
At Leanne underscore Bell.
Thank you. Yeah. At
you're
Leanne
welcome.
Underscore Bell. It's Leanne, LIANNE. And then, my book is available on Book Depository and bookshop.org and Amazon, yeah, and all the places all that you can buy a book.
So we'll put a link to those in the show notes. So people go to greenelephant.show and there'll be a link to the book depository page. So please do go along and support Leanne and give the book a read. We'll certainly be doing that, and we'll do a longer review in the coming weeks, but it sounds exactly up our street, because that simple, easy to understand is entirely what we're about. Cool. Leanne, it's been an absolute delight. Thank you so much for your time, and thank you for being such a good sport and sharing your thoughts with us. And I'm asking you online, but feel free to say no, but we'd like to do a bit more diving into the world of fast fashion, because it is certainly a growing and an important issue, and perhaps next time we could dive into a bit deeper into some of the issues.
Definitely. I'd love to.
Yeah, until next time, that'd be absolutely great. Thanks, Leanne. Awesome. It's been brilliant to talk to you.
Thank you. Thanks for having me.
So it was great speaking to Leanne. She's a lovely character, and you said Russell's got the book.
I love the back page of the book. She says, being eco-friendly isn't about being perfect. It's about making small changes to your lifestyle. Changes so small that you'll barely even notice. But if we adopt these changes, well, we might just be onto something. And I think that fits in with our ethos. Yeah, if we do lots of little things, we're not looking for massive change.
Yeah, absolutely. And finally, a little thing is beach cleaning. And this year there were lots of beach cleans done. 99% of beach cleans found drinks containers, caps and lids. 30 of those such items for every 100 meters of beach surveyed. I loved some of the things that were found on the beaches, including a full-size disco ball. So if you wanted to get your glitter, obviously crisp packets, 20-year-old crisp packets, which were intact, a wig.
Oh, wow. Somebody might want that back.
Yeah, a single wedding shoe.
Oh, that's just sad.
I'm not sure. So I could just imagine the bride hobbling up the aisle with only one shoe on.
Or the bride trying to do a photo shoot in a nice jetty and falling in is more likely.
A fridge door.
Okay.
Brilliant. There were some absolutely brilliant objects. The astronaut Tim Peake apparently found a pair of pink underwear on a beach near Chichester.
Yeah, and it's a very nice picture of him as well.
Lovely. But yeah, so we'll be doing some beach cleans later in the year. We've got volunteer week coming up and things like that.
Yeah,
so
can we wait till it gets a bit warmer?
Yeah,
a bit warmer.
We certainly will. Right. So as always, if you've enjoyed the show, please do go and visit the show page at greenelephant.show. There you can find links to all the stories we've discussed, instructions on how to leave us a review, and links to find us on all the usual podcast providers. Please do go and visit and review and subscribe, as it really helps us to continue the show and keep you entertained. So hopefully we'll see you at greenelephant.show or on social. At GreenEllipod is where we are. But until next time, thanks for listening, and we hope you have a sustainable week.